Okay, that's underway. And with that, let's get underway. I want to say, first of all, I've known of William for years and years, and our paths have crossed at various expos, seminars, workshops, conferences, all kinds of things. In fact, just this past weekend in L.A., we were at one together, the International Alchemy Conference, and as things would occur, we actually had the booth right next to each other. We had no clue, so we were neighbors throughout the weekend. So that was kind of fun. And William is he's an author, investigative mythologist, and he's a guest host of the popular radio show Dreamland. And he's been on about every major radio show that you can imagine, and I'm sure he's been on many other things that I have no idea of. But he's pretty much internationally known for the different areas that he looks into, and I know that he constantly seeks lost secrets, mystical symbols, and forbidden knowledge, and he invites us on a quest to reveal the lost codes and symbols that provide keys to unlock the amazing power within us. And so with that, what I'd like to do is maybe, William, if you just take a moment and maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself, that would be great, so we'll know a little more about you.
Yeah, well, to begin, thank you very much, Earl, for having me on the webinar today, and hello to everybody. Really appreciate you joining us today. I call myself an investigative mythologist, and that's sort of like being an investigative reporter, except instead of looking at current events or news events, I look at past events, and I look at the way things are, the way events or even symbols are repeating themselves in our current events, because I believe that these are sort of signposts that tell us where we're going. And if we can learn to decode these signs and symbols, it'll help us to navigate the kind of call it the chaotic waters that we're all surfing right now. And that's a large bit of what I've focused my attention on is where have we been, where are we now, and where are we going?
That's great. This webinar was described as being Freedom's Gate, the Lost Symbols in the U.S. Capitol. And, of course, that happens to be the exact title of the book. Of your book, I guess it was a collaboration with Dr. Mark Gray, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, and maybe what we should do is just kind of get right on into it, and I'll just start off with a question that what features make the U.S. Capitol a temple? Because I think Thomas Jefferson said that it was, is that correct?
That's right, and let me just say, Earl, that kind of what prompted this, I've been studying some of the Masonic symbolism of D.C. and some of the various street layouts. So I knew that there were a lot of mysteries in D.C., architecturally speaking, and in the symbolism of the United States and so forth, and have covered this for a long time. And what really prompted me to want to write a book about specifically about the Capitol was two things. One, when you read a lot of these books about Washington, D.C., They mention the Capitol. They have to. They talk about the dome. They mention it, but they never take you inside the dome of the U.S. Capitol. And I had known that there's an extraordinary painting in there of George Washington as a deity, and we'll talk about that throughout our conversation today. And so I wanted to address that oversight on behalf of probably 30 or 40 other authors who have written about D.C., by saying, I'm just going to write a book about the dome of the Capitol. And so it just so happens that last December, when I was, I don't know, maybe about halfway through writing of the book or so, we opened up or dedicated the new Capitol Visitor Center, a $650 million renovation of the United States Capitol, an underground facility that is described as the new gateway to the Capitol. And at that event, Harry Reid, who was then the Senate Majority Leader, stood before the congregation there, everybody assembled, and said two things that were very important to me. One, he said, we're glad to have the Capitol Visitor Center complete now because now we won't have to smell the tourists on the hot summer days. And that's a direct quote. And
well,
that kind of leveled me. In fact, what he said was, I know I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it anyway because it's true. Now we won't have to smell the tourists on hot summer days. So it's like, all right, so the perspective is we're the cattle coming into the barn here, okay? And you don't want to smell us anymore. But the second thing he said was that he described the U.S. Capitol as the people's temple. And when he said that, there were various, especially conservative senators, such as Jim DeMint of South Carolina, that took issue with that. He's like, what do you mean calling the U.S. Capitol a temple? And further, Harry Reid had quoted from a 19th century congressman who not only referred to the U.S. Capitol as a temple, but also referred to the Constitution as America's only oracle. And so Senator DeMint was like, what do you mean calling the U.S. Capitol the people's temple? And what do you mean the Constitution is our sole oracle? What about the Bible? And it just really sort of drove me into wanting to answer that question for Senator DeMint. Is the United States Capitol conceived as a temple? And the answer is emphatically yes. It was Thomas Jefferson who literally, as you noted, referred to it as a temple of sovereignty. There were poems written in 1793, the year the Capitol was dedicated, that literally call it the temple of celestial liberty. And what we see in the actual construction of the Capitol as it's evolved since 1793 is that its sacred geometry, its stone construction, its chapel, its crypt, its image of a deified being, its terrifying guardians, its acoustic trickery, its private chambers, among other things, its spiritual symbolism, all say that in addition to being called a temple, it literally is a temple in its architectural design features.
Wow, that's pretty fascinating. It really is. I was wondering, what are some of the lost symbols in the Capitol? What would you say they some of the key ones we would look at?
Well, one of the key symbols that you have to look at right off the bat is the giant elephant in D.C., which is the dome of the U.S. Capitol. What most people don't know is that the dome of the U.S. Capitol is a mirror image of the dome of the Vatican. In fact, the two buildings are literally mirror images of one another. Not only on the exterior, both have a dome and they also have an obelisk right nearby, but on the interior, the great painter Costantino Brumidi, who painted the apotheosis of George Washington, the painting of Washington as a deity inside the dome, also painted the corridors of the United States Senate. They're known as the Brumidi corridors after the painter. These paintings in the Brumidi corridors are replicas of those that Raphael had done in the corridors of the Vatican. And this is all by intention. Brumidi, in fact, was a Vatican painter who was schooled in the techniques of Raphael and knew the alchemical secrets and other secrets that the likes of Raphael and Michelangelo had been studying. And what my research reveals, along with my collaborator on this project, Dr. Mark Gray, is that the United States Capitol is a mirror image of the Vatican inside and out. And something else that's very important that we discovered in our research, and this started coming from statements by people such as Joseph Clark, who was the Grand Master of the Freemasons in Maryland in 1793, who said at the laying of the cornerstone of the Capitol that they dedicated the United States Capitol to the like work of that ever memorable temple to our order erected by our ancient Grand Master Solomon. And then a couple of years later, President Adams comes along and he says, it would be unbecoming the representatives of this nation to assemble for the first time in this solemn temple without looking up to the supreme ruler of the universe and imploring his blessing. When I put those words together, solemn and Solomon, with the temple that it is, it suggests to me that, wait a minute, is the United States Capitol in fact a mirror image as well of Solomon's temple? The great temple of the Masons? And the answer is absolutely yes, that in fact the United States Capitol, the Vatican, and Solomon's Temple from ancient Jerusalem triangulate with one another. In other words, their architectural features, especially the dome, and the folks in the Vatican and the Masons both believe that Solomon's Temple was domed. They are all reflective of one another, and it's as if you're, what you're studying or saying about one, you can say about one of the others.
Well, so you're what you're suggesting here is that the U.S. Capitol does have secrets that were intentionally encoded within its design.
Without question. It is one of the great mystery school books of all time. And part of the cover on it is that we call it the Capitol. We don't think of it as a temple. But when you begin to look at it from the perspective that its designers intended, in other words, that George Washington and Thomas Jefferson intended, they emphatically want you to view the United States Capitol as a temple. And further, what they also ask you to fit into your mindset is that the United States Constitution is America's oracle, which means a divinely received document, and it is the literary counterpart to the Capitol. In other words, they wanted to double down on this knowledge. They wanted to put it in two different forms so that you could interpret or decode this message. They wanted it in paper, in the Constitution, but Jefferson knew that you could burn papers. So what did he do? Well, he encoded all his ancient occult and mystery knowledge in the construction of the University of Virginia, in his home, Monticello, in his summer home, Poplar Forest. All of them encode ancient sacred geometry principles within them that, in Jefferson's words, enabled him to more effectively unite or connect heaven and earth. And so it was especially Jefferson's intention that we would have the documents, but we would also have the documents written in stone for posterity, and that's what we have with the Constitution and the United States Capitol.
So it wasn't that they wrote something additionally that would explain what they had done in the Capitol. They pretty much left it to more of a a research, intuitive, discovery type of thing. Was that?
Yes.
All
I mean, they're counting on the fact or the understanding that a person who can read the language of symbolism will look at the bell-shaped Capitol dome and understand, oh, okay, that's modeled on a stupa, that Eastern religious symbol or Eastern structure that literally creates a vortex of energy. Our word steeple comes from the word stupa. And in the ancient world, they thought of the stupa as literally an axis or a pillar, a ladder that connected heaven and earth. And because of its design, its bell-shaped design, it literally created a vortex or a field of energy. And so when the Freemasons who built the Capitol were looking at the Capitol, they're thinking, okay, this is a vortex field that we're creating here. And in their symbolism, they symbolize it as a beehive buzzing with energy. And in fact, the dome itself is modeled after a beehive, as is the stupa. So, sacred geometry, sacred architecture always models what we see in nature. And so it's the beehive that we want to be looking to as the model for the dome. And as we know, the hive buzzes with energy. And that's the whole idea of the U.S. Capitol as a power spot. I mean, many people around the world acknowledge that the United States Capitol is the most powerful building in the whole world. The Vatican is a very powerful building. And the reason why is because they were designed to be. They are power spots by literal architectural intention and understanding the principles of how they can use this architecture and geometry to create a field of energy. And that takes us to another point about this field. Is the field of energy coming from the United States Capitol, is it positive or negative? And my answer is that it can be used for either way. The technology is neutral. The place is neutral. And in my opinion, if we want to affect change in the United States, We have to focus on the dome of the U.S. Capitol. And the analogy that I like to make, in Dan Brown's new book, he uses some very interesting insights that I also include in my material. And the thing is that my material was published long before his book, The Lost Symbol, came out. But one thing that Dan Brown does is, in his book, is he talks about this concept called noetics, and this notion that people can focus their energy or their intentions to affect change. And so what I had proposed before Dan Brown's book came out even was that five times a day, Muslims turn towards a rock, an oracle spot in Mecca, and they pray together. And it has a dramatic effect. It unifies the people, and it's the primary ritual of the Muslim religion. Well, what would happen, Earl and others listening, if three times a day, let's say, Americans turned towards the United States Capitol dome and started sending their intentions towards that dome to lift its energy, to lift its frequency, to lift its vibration? I mean, if you feel like there is negative energy in the Capitol or coming off of it, then you can change it, because the dome is literally meant to be a receptor as well as a transmitter of this energy, or the spiritual energy, or this vibration that can be programmed into it. And it's up to us to take back the dome by programming it in the way that we want it to be programmed.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because what you one of the things that you're implying there is the fact that our founding fathers, not only that they were profoundly spiritual men, but they had an understanding of spiritual matters that goes quite a bit beyond what many today understand. It's just really interesting, because what you're speaking on touches into what some of us might call metaphysics, that type of thing. And sometimes people maybe misunderstand what that science would be, the science of metaphysics and how it works. But I'm sure that you understand quite well how it relates to what Christianity would call prayer and meditation.
That's what we're talking about here.
The intention through their prayer, creating a better situation in their life through their prayer and their spirituality. And I think that's what you're saying, right?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And it's not only a right, it is absolutely our duty to get involved with what is happening in Washington, and especially to know, I call it own the dome. All of us need to own what is going on inside there, because it's on each and every one of us. And if we decide to do nothing about what is going on, that won't cut it. We have to get involved, and we have to own that we are our government. We sometimes don't like what our government does, just as sometimes we don't like what we do as individuals, but we have to own it. It is on us. And secondly, we have to therefore get involved. And I can think of no better way to get involved than to go to the Capitol and to make your physical presence literally made known to your representatives, your congressman, your senator, and express what your wishes are. And if we don't do that, then I guess we just kind of get what we deserve, don't we?
Yeah, I think so. You know, anytime you don't take responsibility for something and involve your energy, your intention, your activity in it, you're going to get just whatever comes along your way. And it seems kind of ridiculous to complain when we don't do anything at all except just let the Mack truck run us over. So, well, I got run over by a truck. Well, what did you do? Well, I just stood there and ignored it.
Right.
I was, one of the things that comes up, and I guess, I know you've spoken to all kinds of groups and been involved in all kinds of activities and across the board. And certainly the folks that we touch with our magazine and that come to our webinars, a lot of times, for lack of better terms, we're people that believe in freedom of choice, self-empowerment, self-sufficiency, freedom issues, liberty. A lot of people call themselves libertarians or constitutionalists, patriots, you know, all of those types of names. And so many times there could be a reaction to this type of information like you're getting that, well, wait a minute, are you saying that there, that everything is totally benevolent and they're not those that are working to certain ends that are against us, maybe infringing our liberties and eroding our Constitution? And, you know, I don't know, how might you address that so that people that have that wondering in their mind can understand that a little better? I think you and I touched on that at the conference as we talked this past weekend.
Well, let me give you an example of that. Back in the summer, Dick Durbin plainly stated, the senator from Illinois, said that the banks own the dome. And I'm like, well wait a minute. You know, I'm not real happy about that. And it just, you know, just suggested to me, I just remember a biblical story when Jesus encountered the money changers in the temple. He had two choices, either, you know, turn the other way or throw them out. And, of course, he famously threw those money changers out. And my point is, to answer your question, is that I believe that this the spiritual technology that we see in the Capitol is inherently neutral. It could be used for good or ill. There's no question about it. And I totally agree with Senator Durbin that the American people no longer own the dome. And that means something has to change. That means we have to find a way to get them out. And what I'm looking for is there a secret? Is there a technology encoded within the construction of the dome itself that would help us to raise the vibration of the activity that goes on inside that temple? And I believe that there is. I believe that what has to happen is that the American people have to, one, realize that building they see every night on the news, that they have no idea about the spiritual symbolism or lost symbols that are inside that dome, that they must up-level their awareness and understanding of that building as a temple. And once you establish that the standard is that this place is a temple, then you ask yourself the question, are the people that are in that place behaving as if they are in a sacred space? Because if they're not, then they have to go. And that takes us back to the question of how do we remove them from that temple? Well, we do that by changing the elected officials that we send there, but I also believe that we do that by raising the vibration of the dome by literally ringing it like a bell. And that's part of the technology that I'm speaking of here. The United States Capitol Dome literally is made of cast iron. It is a cast iron bell. And we can start raising the vibration of that place such that the people that operate there, that spend their days working in that place, will begin to be altered by the intention and by the vibration that the American people are putting into that place. And if this plan works, then what will happen is that those who are in there and are doing work that is contrary to the highest principles of this country will not be able to operate there any longer.
That's very encouraging and rather interesting. It reminds me, what we're talking about today reminds me of Republic Magazine's issue number 11, and it was titled The Dark Hand of History. And we covered a lot of that type of thing that we touched on here with some of the folks working in a dark manner, I would call to really kind of put the light out of truth and to kind of pervert and distort things and move them in a direction that's not to the benefit of humanity. We covered things like the Order of Skull and Bones, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bohemian Grove, New World Order, various things of that nature. And it did focus on that part to expose it, more of an expose. And this is interesting that you're bringing a little bit of a positive light to the symbology and what might be more rightly focused and moved towards as opposed to the direction that we have been going in many areas.
Well, it's perhaps a slightly different approach. I think it's important to understand and know the lay of the land conspiracy-wise. But at the same time, and I have been working in that area for a number of years, a couple of decades actually, and I know a lot of the authors, the writers, the speakers on that subject matter. But personally, what I've always wanted, I mean, I know these groups exist. I know some of the things that they do. What I want to know is, what can I do about it? How can I improve myself? How can I change things from my little old perspective? And what I find in the U.S. Capitol is a tremendous amount of inspiration and insight. I mean, literally, when you are in the dome of the U.S. Capitol, in the rotunda specifically, and you're feeling the energy of those massive columns, the spiritual energy in that place is palpable. There's no question in my mind that beings, individuals of lower vibration who focus on sex and drugs and control and power and all of those kind of lower energy sort of activities, they just get intoxicated by the energy of this place because you can feel it. And my point is that what we've got to do is start to find individuals who are emotionally beyond that, who aren't taking interns into the back room with a cigar. Instead, they're focused on doing positive things that they're at an emotional level of maturity where they have overcome those lower energies. And this isn't looking for a perfect person. It's just looking for somebody that's an actual adult instead of all these little power-hungry children that we keep sending into this playpen because they don't even know the history of this building. They don't know that it's a temple, nor do they care. And part of their response to researchers like me when I start coming in there and start asking questions is that this is none of your business because this is our private club. The United States Senate and Congress is one of the most exclusive clubs on the planet, and they view the Capitol Temple as their members-only club. And if they operate from that perspective, we get the result that we are getting in our world. However, if we begin then to cultivate and look for individuals that we can support that have overcome those lower childish issues, then we're going to start to get a different result, and the energy is there to make that happen. And instead of sending people to the Capitol that will get intoxicated by the energy, we will send people there, and individuals who are listening can even go there to the Capitol and tap into this energy and use it so that we can uplift everybody instead of what's going on right now, which is to enslave everybody.
Yes, I would say, just guessing, is probably, you know, 99.9% of the ones up there are like you're describing. They're immature, insecure children that are just in a playground satisfying whatever they want to satisfy and just thinking they're having a big party and a big ball and taking payoffs and everything else.
Exactly.
But, they're totally unworthy of it, and it seems to me that that's it's incumbent upon all of us to change them out and bring in people who will respond to those values and what is symbolized there.
And we are those people, Earl. It is us that has to go there. If we go into the Capitol and they don't like to smell us, well, that's too bad because we don't smell like cows. We smell like the future. We terrify them because they know that we're coming. And they want to build barriers that will keep us out of there. And instead, what we've got to do is move through those gates and get in that building and let them look us in the eye and see what we see and start to see it our way and allow us to use the Capitol for the purpose. I mean, look, it makes people nervous, guards and some of the guides, when I go into the Capitol and I lay on my back in the center of the rotunda and look up at that magnificent painting of George Washington as a deified being that's in the eye of the rotunda, in the oculus of the dome. And I just tell them, back off. I mean, this is my capital. it's my right to be able to come in here and lay on my back and absorb and see this imagery if I choose to. And I think that that's what has to happen. And that is, if I'm asking people to protest or to do one thing, that would be it. Because there is no reason why we should not be allowed to go into that dome and lay on our backs and experience the dome in this way. And that is a definite line that they want to draw, because they don't, one, they don't want us going into the Capitol, most of them, and two, they don't want us using it for what it really is, which is a temple, because that scares them.
Yes, I can imagine. That's pretty interesting. I just want to remind everybody that we're speaking with William Henry, and in regards to the law symbols in the Capitol, U.S. Capitol. And just to remind everybody, if you do have a question for William, if you're on the phone bridge line, just go ahead and hit *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll unmute it so that you can dialogue with him a little bit. If you've accessed the webinar online, just type your question in the question box and hit submit, and that'll bring it to our attention, and we can ask that. So what I want to do is I'd like to go ahead and maybe move into some further questions that have come up. How maybe some of the specifics of how Americans can tap the power of the Capitol Temple to improve themselves in our country. I know you touched on it a little bit, but maybe just go a little bit more into it.
Well, let's answer that by bringing into our conversation something that we've talked about a couple of times, and that is the painting that's in the eye of the dome. It's called the Apotheosis of George Washington. And what the painting shows is George Washington enthroned on a rainbow in a heavenly scene. And as I say, the title of the painting is The Apotheosis of George Washington. Apotheosis is a Greek word. It means to deify, to raise from a man to a God-man. And the way I interpret this is in several ways. First, I seem to be the first author to make the connection between the way Washington is portrayed sitting on a rainbow with the way that the resurrected Jesus is portrayed. He, too, is shown on a rainbow. And what it suggested to me was that what the message in the United States Capitol ultimately is that each of us has within us this amazing, call it a divine spark, call it a divine essence, that can be raised from the human level into the level of the divine or the semi-divine. And that process is, in fact, encoded in the painting, The Apotheosis of George Washington. And I say that because not only is Washington on a rainbow, a la the resurrected Jesus, but he is also surrounded by five pagan deities, five pagan gods that exactly correspond to the alchemical symbols of earth, air, fire, water, and space-time. This is a totally historical, absolutely unique discovery that has never been published before, according to Dr. Barbara Walnan, who is the curator of the United States Capitol. And when Dr. Gray and I, my collaborator on our book, Freedom's Gate, showed these findings to Dr. Walnan, she was stunned, because this message that the way to achieve true freedom and true liberty is through alchemy, in other words, harmonizing these various aspects of ourselves, has never been seen before. And what she told us is that from now on, the guides and other people will have to start explaining the apotheosis of George Washington in a new way. And I'm excited to report that the guides in particular are the ones who are really taking to this material. Freedom's Gate, our book about the Capitol, is in the guides' library, and I've been told by guides that they are studying it, and they're starting to incorporate this material into their public tours of the Capitol.
That's pretty interesting. That really is. Well, you know, something that kind of comes to mind a bit is that and some of the listeners may or may not ask this, but they could. I could think of a couple of people I know might ask it. Isn't portraying George Washington as a resurrected being heretical or blasphemous?
It could be the most heretical or most blasphemous painting ever created. And I have to leave it up to the listener, the viewer, the reader, to determine in which category it falls for them. What I wanted to do in Freedom's Gate is to, one, observe this symbolism for the first time, that it's actually there, document that it's there, and allow individuals to come to their own conclusion. There's definitely something going on there, to say the least. Back to Constantino Brumidi, the painter. He worked in the Vatican throughout the 1840s. Then in 1848, there was a revolution in Rome. And it was called the Republican Revolution. The Italians, they wanted to have freedom to worship any religion they wanted. They were at the time constrained to be either Catholic or Jewish. Those were the only two choices. And they said, well, we want choices beyond that. And the Republican Revolution actually kind of parallels the American Revolution. It was about choice. People wanted freedom to worship in any way they wanted. They wanted freedom to become anything that they could possibly become. And in fact, what happened is that Constantino Brumidi sided against the Pope in this revolution. And after the European armies came in and restored order to Rome, Brumidi was imprisoned by the Pope and remained there for almost a year until Jesuit priests came over from New York and negotiated Brumidi's release, which the Pope agreed to, but only on the condition that Brumidi's wife and children would remain in Italy with the Pope. Now, what this tells me, reading between the lines and doing the historical research on Brumidi, is that this man carries tremendous knowledge. He carries tremendous knowledge that the Vatican does not want released unless it is essentially controlling the release of that information. The other thing it tells me is that when Brumidi came to the United States, he had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder because he was given a choice, either die in prison or come to America, which he dearly wanted to do, but only on the condition that his wife and children remain in Italy under the control of the Pope. And so when Brumidi finally meets his destiny in the corridors of the United States Capitol and then is given the opportunity to paint the dome of the United States Capitol, you have to ask the question, did he, one, want to settle a grudge with the Vatican? And what does he do? I mean, he portrays Washington as a Christ-like being? You got to be kidding me. Not only that, but he resurrects the five pagan gods, the gods of alchemy, that the Vatican had just spent the past 1,600 years trying to get rid of. And so what you have here is either Brumidi acting as a lone gunman, if you will, settling a score with the Vatican, or you have to ask the question, is he in fact operating as an agent of some other unknown entity? And if so, who might that be? I don't have an answer, but the result is in the proof is in the result of his effort in this alchemical icon or alchemical masterpiece, as I call it, where Brumidi is saying that if you want to achieve true freedom and true liberty, you have to follow the words of Thomas Jefferson and establish or focus your life, dedicate your life towards becoming an enlightened or an awakened being. And so if enlightenment or an awakened consciousness and the belief that you can transform yourself into a God being, and that is actually true liberty or true freedom, if that is blasphemous or heretical, then this is the most blasphemous and heretical painting ever. However, if you think that awakening yourself and achieving enlightenment is the path to true liberty, then this is the greatest alchemical painting ever conceived because it literally tells you how to do that. And it offers George Washington as the model for this process.
Well, he's certainly a very well-known and a very good model for all of that, highly revered through the years.
And let me say, Earl, too, that it's important to note that when I talk like this, what I'm implying is that George Washington, in the belief of Constantino Brumidi in 1865, ascended or resurrected. And people come back at me and say, that's insane to think that George Washington resurrected from the dead. He could not do that in the Christian sense because Jesus hasn't come back to lift people out of their graves yet. So that's heresy. And it's insane for you to think that that's possible. And my response to that is that in my book, Freedom's Gate, I put together the ultimate collection of images that are called, or paintings that are called, the apotheosis of George Washington. And as a matter of fact, after Washington's death, there were several just absolutely stunning paintings that were painted of Washington being lifted into the heavens on a sunbeam or through the sun or otherwise lifted into the heavens by angels. So it was, in fact, a common belief at the time that Washington resurrected from the dead after his passing on earth. And in fact, this belief extended all the way up into 1865 when Brumidi was painting. We know this because there were postcards that were printed for Abraham Lincoln's funeral that portray George Washington, not Jesus Christ, meeting Abraham Lincoln in heaven, in the heavenly realms, after Lincoln's own death.
That's pretty interesting. I doubt if very many people are aware of that at all.
It's shocking when you first see it, but this is the belief that that existed up until 1865, and then in the 20th century, we completely lose this sort of belief. We get into a different sort of America in the 20th century, and that's the one we're trying to change here in the 21st century.
Okay. Well, I know a number of people have just joined us recently on the webinar, and I just want to remind folks that we're speaking with William Henry, and we're talking about the symbolism in the Capitol. And I wanted to let you know, if you do have a question for William and you're on the phone bridge line, hit star 2 on your phone keypad, and we'll unmute the line so that you can speak with him. If you're online and listening via the Internet, then just go ahead and type your question in the question box and hit submit, and we'll see the question and be able to ask him that. I wanted to return a little bit again to the apotheosis. Mm-hmm. As an icon of transformation, can you maybe just elucidate a little bit more on that, what that does mean?
Yeah, the word icon is a very powerful word when you're talking about artwork. The icon makers primarily were engaged in their craft in the 14th to 17th century. And what they believed, these icon makers, and the most popular icons were those of the transfigured Jesus. There was that episode when Jesus took the disciples up to the top of the mountain and revealed himself as a being of light. The word the Bible uses is transfigured or metamorphosed into a being of light and then back into flesh. And, of course, this was a terrifying experience for the disciples that accompanied Jesus, and he told them that this was actually a secret for the end of time or the end times. Well, what started to happen is that between the 14th and 17th century especially, these icon makers would start to make these images of the transfiguration. And what they believed was that literally they could tune into in a deep way, mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally, the feeling or sensation or the emotion that Jesus was experiencing at that moment and literally duplicate it in their bodies. This was an ancient technology that they were using that, in fact, the early Christians used it as well in their artwork. And what happened is that along came the religion of Islam. And when Islam came along and looked at some of these icons, they said, well, y'all are basically a bunch of idol-worshipping hillbillies. And Christianity made a conscious decision at that time to eliminate the icons from their repertoire. I mean, the earliest Christians literally revered these images, these paintings, as visual gospels, and they had expressions like the image itself will show you the way, or enter through the image, because they knew of this very subtle technology that said that humans, in a sort of a monkey-see-monkey-do moment, can mimic what they are seeing on television or in artwork or in other ways and fashions. I mean, there's another principle of this that has to do with the pricking of needles. What medicine has shown is that a person watching another person get pricked by a needle, like when they're taking a shot, shows the same physical response as does the person who's actually receiving the shot. And so this is what we find is the actual subtle technology that the icon makers were using, and is in fact, I believe, what Brumidi was using in the icon of the apotheosis of George Washington. He knew that this painting was in a very powerful place, a place that heightened our bodily sensations, and that if you could tune into this painting, if you will, that you could actually experience in your body the energy that is surrounding George Washington. And that is the same energy that was present in the paintings of the transfigured Jesus. It's an extraordinary technology, but that's exactly what we see going on inside the dome of the Capitol.
Very interesting. I was wondering, just out of curiosity, I know you alluded to this a little bit previously, but besides just the folks that are kind of working on the floor of the Capitol, but maybe even all the way up to the top management there in the Capitol, what percentage of people do you think are aware of what it's really about?
Probably half of 1%.
Okay.
Maybe half of 1%. When you take a tour of the Capitol, when you take a tour of the dome, and I've been in there many times, in the past, the tour guides spend about 3 seconds on the apotheosis. And then they're talking about other paintings or other features inside the rotunda. And so the awareness just isn't there. But that's starting to change, and it's starting to change with my book, Freedom's Gate. And even Dan Brown is talking about this now and drawing attention to the apotheosis painting. So what's going to start to happen is that as the millions of readers of Dan Brown's book start to get curious about this, they're going to start looking into the Capitol, and they're going to hopefully they'll find Freedom's Gate, and they'll begin to understand what is really going on in that building and the opportunity that we have by understanding that building.
Well, I sure look forward to the transformation of that cesspool of garbage up there into something a lot higher order, a lot more integrity.
I'm with you. I mean, and that's my point, is that over the years, and I have to work through this a little bit, because when I say I've written a book about the United States Capitol, most people are like, oh, I don't want nothing to do with that place. And what that tells me is, yeah, well, you just fell into exactly the trap they want you to fall into. There's nothing I can do about that. I'm not interested in that. That place is a garbage dump. I'm staying away from that place. That's exactly what they want. That is exactly what they want. So what I'm saying is like, no, we've got to pierce that veil. We've got to lift that veil and understand what is really there and how we can use it to transform that place, to raise its vibration and cause the rats to get off that ship. And that's what we're all about here.
Okay. Well, you call yourselves investigative mythologists and symbologists.
Yes.
Maybe explain what that is and how can investigating mythology and symbolism actually help us?
Well, we live in a sea of symbols. The all-seeing eye on the back of the dollar bill, the CBS all-seeing eye. Every corporation has a logo. Most of them are derived from ancient myths and legends. And if we're unaware of the significance of these myths and legends, that and the story that some of these corporations or even individuals are attempting to communicate to us, then we aren't going to be able to make up our right minds when we're dealing with these individuals or entities. And so what I try to do is to take a look and show how some of these ideas from the ancient world are being brought forward into our modern era and how we can understand the meaning of these symbols. I'll give you a good example. Barack Obama, when he was running for president, had a very distinctive logo. It was a white sun with three rays extending from it. And when I looked at that, I noticed right away exactly what that symbolism was and the source of it. It's an ancient Egyptian symbol for the new dawn or the new day. It's an alchemical symbolism for, in fact, the Messiah. And I was surprised later when Obama's campaign people came right out and said that, yes, we selected the new dawn symbol because that's who Barack Obama is. He represents that new dawn or that new beginning. Well, what the average person didn't understand is that they were using ancient symbolism to entice people to vote for a person who, when you peel back the skin on the onion, must be thinking of himself as a messianic figure. And unless you know the language of the symbolism, and it was very overt in this case and very intentional according to his people, you're not going to be able to get the true picture of the person. And I didn't learn this until after the election, and unfortunately I didn't see myself as voting for a messiah. I was hoping to vote for a politician who would be able to come in and effect positive change. And had I known that, it might have changed my perspective of the individual. So there's an example of how this symbolism is being used on us, but most of us have no idea what it means.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I know certainly our readers and listeners are, just as they were horrified at who Bush was and what he did in the presidency, they're just as horrified, if not more, what Obama is doing, because they see basically that they have the same masters, their puppet masters,
yes,
same group of people. And so those strings are just being pulled, and they're playing along what the song is supposed to be, that they're supposed to sing along in that hymn book, and that's what's being carried out. They see that Obama is Bush term number three.
Exactly.
That all the same stuff is still in place, the war, the torture, the abridgment of civil liberties, all of those types of things, and there's really been no change in spite of all the rhetoric about change.
Yeah, and that's part of what I do is to say, okay, well, if they're speaking, and mostly what they speak to is the non-rational mind, myths, images, these archetypes, they work their wonders on the non-rational mind. And the way to become rational is to understand the myth and the image and the archetype, so then you can disable it and decide, well, I'm just not going to allow you to use that symbolism on me or that myth. And so actually what mythology does in the study of the symbolism is it brings you back into kind of your right mind, and that's just absolutely vital, especially right now, because everything is geared towards keeping us in an emotional and non-rational state, keeping us in fear, in other words.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, William, I want to be sure that at this point, and just before I have you give out your contact information, I'll remind folks again that if you do have a question, hit *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll unmute the line and you can speak. If you tune in online, type your question in the question box and hit submit, and we'll ask the question. What I feel is that you have been so succinctly clear and have laid it out that I can't hardly imagine what question people would hear or would have. I think that they've heard such a clarity of presentation. Certainly, I would invite people to go to your website to make contact with your information. I think you've written, is it 14 or 15 books? How many books have you written?
It's 15 books now. That's right. Yeah, Freedom's Gate, The Lost Symbols in the U.S. Capitol is my most recent and the 15th book, as well as numerous DVD presentations.
Well, you must have been very busy because I don't think you didn't start writing that long ago, did you, or did you?
1996. I published my first book in 1996.
Boy, that's pretty proficient. I mean, you know, it wasn't – that's not that long of a period of time. You just whipped out book after book.
It was about 1.5 a year. I was just really cranking.
Wow, I don't know how you do it.
Lots of work.
Great. That's really great. Well, I think it'd be appropriate now. I mean, it's just really interesting. There's, I mean, we don't have a specific question for folks. I may have anticipated and asked a lot of the questions that they would have asked, but we'll see if between now and the end of the webinar if there are some questions that come up. But please give out all of your contact information, if you would.
Okay. My website is williamhenry.net. That's williamhenry.net. And if you go there, you'll find ordering information for books and DVDs, as well as an order phone number, which is 615-292-7863. Again, 615-292-7863.
Okay, and they can get not only your books. Your books are all available there, or just some of them?
Yes, they are. Yeah, all my books are available there, as well as the DVDs. And again, the most recent one is Freedom's Gate.
Right. Well, it looks like you have some very, very interesting books and DVDs. And I know from hearing your lectures at various times through the years that it certainly kept me very interested in learning more. You know, it's brought up a lot of thinking in me about, you know, what is going on. And I think, you know, even if folks listening maybe aren't sure they agree 100% with you, I think it's good for us to hear varying presentations of information so that we can expand our understanding of what's out there and maybe expand our understanding of what's going on in the world.
I agree, I may have editorialized a little bit today, but in the book, especially Freedom's Gate, as well as my other books, I view myself as an information service provider. I don't have necessarily an axe to grind. I'm trying to get out there and find the good, the bad, and the ugly, and report it in a way that anybody from any perspective would be able to gain important information from that would assist them in their own making up their own mind. So I'm not trying to say that my point of view is absolutely the correct one, but what I am trying to say is that this is the conclusions that I drew after doing extensive research on the United States Capitol, and everything that you see in the book is going to be straight up. If it works for my advantage, it's there. If it doesn't, if it kind of detracts the argument, I try to include it anyway because I think it's important to have both sides or all three or four sides.
Yes, I think that's very important as well. I would. We do have a question that came in from, just gives the initials, RS in Cleveland, and I knew this type of question, if there anything would come up or any area would be sparked, this would be the one. What do you know about Obama being involved in the New World Order?
I don't know anything about Obama being involved in the New World Order other than to go back to what I was saying about his logo when he was running for president, because I believe that that logo tells the whole story of who this person is or who he believes he is. And again, what it says is that Obama views himself or those who back him and support him view him as a modern-day sun god. They view him as embodying the rising sun, the new day. He is the, if you want to use the word, the Messiah. And you can't, and this is literally from the words that, from his advertising people, where they were using this symbolism to specifically because he is the rising sun and the new day. And those are terms, those are concepts that are often associated with the New World Order. Now, which side of the New World Order are you talking about? The side that seeks to uplift humankind even to the level of gods, or the side that seeks to enslave humankind and keep us at the level of slaves and sex objects. I think it's very clear when you look at the proposals of the Obama administration that they are on the side that seek to enslave us financially with a debt that can never be repaid and is probably never meant to be repaid. In the book of Proverbs, King Solomon says that the borrower is servant to the lender. And if the United States government is the one that's doing all the lending, then that means we are all servants of that government. And I personally am not interested in enslaving myself to an organization or individuals that want to steal my soul's energy by keeping us so far in debt that we will never see the light of day.
Well, it sounds like it touches on the what you would call by your fruits you shall know them. By their fruits you shall know them.
Absolutely.
And it's regardless of how aware he is of all of the inner workings of New World Order, certainly it seems that he has been being directed or is certainly playing into the hands of those that intentionally know the direction they want to move things, and it's not necessarily at all for the betterment of humanity.
Right. Exactly. So what I'd like to pay attention to, and I've got a small collection of these things going. I mean, I could have many more if I wanted, but the images that you see online or in newspapers of President Obama with a halo behind him, when he was running for president, they would put the image of his new sun god logo behind him, and it looked like a religious halo. And in fact, just this morning, I pulled another one off the web. Reuters had published it, of Obama delivering some remarks, and behind him is the seal of the President of the United States, and his head is literally surrounded by these stars with the golden rim of the seal all around him. And the only reason you do that is because you're trying to present this person as a holy man or as a messianic figure. And to me, it's actually offensive for him to be portrayed in this way, but they do it over and over and over again. And again, it goes to this message that Obama equals messianic figure.
Well, and I think that's some of the confusion, William, that we see is that so many times folks that are involved in whatever you want to call it, the freedom movement, whistleblowers, people that are exposing things, people that are talking about New World Order, Illuminati, those types of things, is they discover that these people who are doing these things that are very harmful to our freedoms, our liberties, they will surround themselves with different symbolism, and they will oftentimes, and some of the people that have witnessed a few things, will be involved in certain rituals or ceremonies using certain symbolism. And so then you can see how it would be easy for some of these people to deduce that, hey, wait a minute, anytime this symbology is present, it's always of the satanic order or the Illuminati or something evil to enslave the planet and just to gain power over people and no respect for human life. I mean, I'm sure you can understand how that would happen, so hence the confusion. You know, somebody might hear someone like you and say, well, wait a minute, is he just being an apologist for all of this bad activity? And I think you're distinguishing that today, and that's very helpful.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing that back up. Right, and part of my response to that, too, is to say, well, a little bit of the trouble I have with some of these folks that write about the Illuminati and some of these groups really don't know what they're just using words that they know will elicit a response from people. For example, Thomas Jefferson wrote extensively about the Illuminati. He wrote extensively about Adam Weishaupt, who was the founder of the Illuminati. And at that time, before the Illuminati became the kind of cartoon version that you hear bandied about today by so many authors, the Illuminati was a group that was dedicated to the perfection of the human race. They wanted the government and they wanted all of religion off our backs. And that was why Jefferson ascribed to the ideals of the Illuminati, because he and many of the other founding fathers were coming out of that Enlightenment period. And they just simply wanted to go to a physical space where they could also create a psychological space where individuals were free of the king, free of the church, and free of the government, were then allowed to live their lives the way that they saw fit. That is an Illuminati ideal. And so if you have a problem with that, then you're actually anti-Illuminati.
Well, you know, it's interesting because that, you know, that sort of thing has come up through the years, and as many people have spoken of, some people that were very involved with the Masonic lodges, is that like many organizations, you can come up through their ranks, and there can be a series of tests given, but they say that at some point in the very high achievement areas, there could be certain tests given, and if you respond a certain way, you can move up through one direction, which is more what some people would call a dark element of it, or if you answer another way, pretty much that's the end of the line, that's as high as you go. That is supposed to be an induction method of some of these organizations. Have you heard of that? Do you know what I'm speaking
of? Nope, I have not heard of that, and I haven't met anybody that has reached that level. And so perhaps I will one day. And I'm not sure that I hope, but I just don't have firsthand knowledge of that. And until I have firsthand knowledge, I'm trying not to engage in rumor, innuendo, gossip, all that kind of thing, because I don't know personally that it's true.
Right. Well, there are a lot of things that are heard, a lot of things bandied about, and I think that's part of what we're all about, to discover just what is the truth in all of these different areas.
I agree, and that's why the search is so important, that each of us engage on it in a personal basis. You know, don't listen to me. Don't listen to some of these other authors. Do the work yourself. Go to Washington, D.C. Experience this for yourself. Look at it yourself. Come to your own conclusions and decide what is going to be the path that you want to take for it. And, hey, you know, the journey itself is a huge reward, and I encourage anybody to come along with me. I do conduct tours of D.C., and it's very rewarding to go with people that maybe have been to D.C. as a child, or perhaps they've been to Egypt or Greece or maybe even Rome, and then they come back to D.C., and they're able then to kind of open it up because they have some life experience that they can now start looking at it from a different point of view, and it really is a fantastic experience. And so, again, I hope everyone that's listening will get a chance to visit the Capitol and make your presence known and explore this for yourself.
Yes. Well, I just wanted to say I know that we have gone over a little bit, and there are a few more questions that have come in. I wonder, can we indulge you a little longer?
Sure.
Great. We have Angela Stark from Culver City, California. She says, hi, William. I know of you from listening to Coast to Coast. Thank you for coming on. I have a question. In your opinion, what is the most important discovery you have made in your research that pertains to what's happening today, and how do we remedy the situation?
I would say it's the true spiritual nature of the United States Capitol as a temple, as a bell that can be rung. And if we can learn to ring that bell and to own our own domes, that will provide a route to just tremendous change. And that's what I really encourage people is to kind of follow me and take that pun. The slang word dome also means head. And so actually when we're talking about the dome and owning the dome of the U.S. Capitol, what we're really talking about is taking control of our own thoughts, making our own decision, owning our own dome, and not allowing an outside group or an entity to tell us what to think.
Okay, very good. Johnny in Bakersfield asks, I am familiar with some works and YouTube videos of Jordan Maxwell. Have you two worked together?
I've known Jordan since 1998. I had written a book called One Foot in Atlantis, about the occult war that we call World War II, and started writing soon after about FDR's quest for the Holy Grail in 1934 and how the all-seeing eye symbol was placed on the back of the $1 bill as a result of that search He was looking for the Holy Grail as well as the reincarnated Jesus. And that formed a real bond with Jordan and I. And, yeah, we have worked together. We've been to Egypt together. We've done presentations together. Ever since then, I have tremendous admiration and respect for Jordan. We call him the Godfather, and the reason why is because a lot of these researchers wouldn't be here if not for Jordan. Now, that said, I don't always agree with Jordan. I think he has tremendous insight, but sometimes I take a slightly different path than he does on our interpretation of some of these symbols, but that's okay. I mean, I still highly respect him and consider him a good friend.
That's great, and it's interesting that Johnny brought up Jordan Maxwell, because I also was talking with Jordan Maxwell at the conference this past weekend, and you know, certainly we're looking to get him on. Looks like he's going to maybe be able to come on with us in a couple of weeks. So
that's fantastic. You know, and I did have a chance to talk with Jordan as well at the Alchemy Conference and at another recent conference, and just on the question of how come Americans don't know about the symbols and the spiritual symbolism in the U.S. Capitol. And Jordan's answer is classic Jordan Maxwell. It really stuck with me, and it's the answer that I often cite to people. And that answer is the reason why we don't know about this symbolism is because it's none of our business.
Oh, yeah, that's the attitude of those folks.
Yeah, that's the attitude of these folks. It's none of our business. And what I'm saying is we better make it our business, because this is, I think, this information, this the dome of the U.S. Capitol itself, literally, I think, contains the keys to assuring our freedom. And if we choose to turn a blind eye to them, then I think we're going to be in even more trouble than we're in right now. Look at it, Earl. I mean, there's millions of people that are going to, what was there, 1.5 million people at the Tea Party in D.C. back in October or September of 2009. They're expecting 1.5 million people on the Mall on April 15th for a major tax tea party in 2010. Now, just imagine if 1.5 million people simultaneously focus their energy on the dome and about raising that dome. I think it has tremendous potential for helping to unify people, and also is a tool that we can use to take back the dome, to get those, especially the bankers, out of there, those slave masters.
Yeah, intention is very powerful, and it is important for us to acknowledge that and to work with it instead of going into fear and being, you know, more paralyzed by that, or just being reactionary rather than taking action.
That's right.
In an intelligent fashion rather than the distortion that fear can present. Another question that someone asked, they're anonymous, it says, what is Bohemian Grove?
I don't know that much about the Bohemian Grove, other than they're one of these elite secret societies. They meet every year in California, in Northern California, and that's really all I know about them, and that's really all I need to know about them, which is nothing, in my opinion, because following them and understanding all the intricacies, naming the names, what does that do for me? How does that empower me? Well, sure, it helps me navigate. It helps me to know the lay of the land, but I want real information. I want something that will help to improve me as an individual, mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally. And chasing around some of these deadbeat members of the Bohemian Grove, I don't see that as a constructive way of going about it. So personally, I know nothing about them and probably never will.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, I just wanted to say that it's been quite an enjoyable experience today. I think everyone listening would have to say it certainly stimulated some thoughts, no matter what your opinion at this point is. But I would encourage everyone to make up their own mind. Do their own research. Just like William said, don't believe him, don't believe anybody. Do your own research and satisfy yourself that you've got information that rings true for you, and then double-check it again.
Yeah. I mean, we need to be able to explain this to each other. If we can't explain it, then we're just being conned. And that's the point of this research that we're all undergoing here, is to be able to understand it ourselves, to be able to explain it ourselves, and to be able to make up our own minds.
absolutely. That is very, very important. Well, I just thought that, you know, it might be good for you to give out your contact information once again, because we have had other people join us since you last gave it out.
My website is williamhenry.net. The book we've been discussing is called Freedom's Gate, The Lost Symbols in the U.S. Capitol. And my other contact information, mailing address, and email and all that is also available on my website.
Okay. And is there any type of phone number that people can call to make contact with?
Yes, they can call my order line, which is area code 615-292-7863.
Okay, and do you choose to publicly give out an email address or not? Or
sure, my email address is whenrytn@earthlink.net. That's whenrytn, that's T as in Tom, N as in Nancy, @earthlink.net.
Okay, and I wanted to, you know, once again thank you. And
thank you, Earl.
Folks that are listening, did you have maybe if you did have one parting thought you want to share, or anything you may have thought, well, gee, I should have mentioned this or whatnot, or it sounds pretty complete. So if you do, this will be a good time to do it. Otherwise, we'll close it here.
The only closing thought I have is that it is time now for each of us to not only own the dome, but also to ohm it, to send it that higher spiritual energy and drive that energy that's in there now out.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you know, a lot of people, you know, you have said something to that effect. That's kind of a more of a down-to-earth slang expression, and they call it pray and shuffle your feet.
Pray and shuffle your feet. There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, with that, William, thank you very much. And I just want to let everybody know that we will have the recording of this webinar today posted fairly shortly after this is complete, and so you can come back and take advantage of it and share it with others or re-listen to it yourself. And we do these each and every week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at the same time. We've got lots of different guests. Check out our menu of different guests that we've had in the past, including Williams at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And with that, thank you, everyone, and we will see you on the webinar next Tuesday. Thank you. Thank you, William. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
The moderator has left the conference.